have a preference in teaching adults or children in your classes? If so, why?
I've mainly taught teenagers. I've spent 25 years teaching high school near Boston, and first at a private school and now at a public. But I've really enjoyed the few adult learners that I have had. I've had friends who have said, my wife needs to study for the cosmetology exam. Can you help her? And just as a coach, not because I'm an expert in cosmetology or how to do nails and makeup and eyebrows, I'll take in on things like that. So I don't know that I have a preference. Obviously, adults are a little more advanced and there's a certain way to relate. You know, I also like being kind of a fatherly figure to the students and teens that I've taught for most of my career. So I can't say I have a preference. I am really excited to start teaching more adults, building an online business. So that's really exciting.
Yeah, that sounds really exciting to have that transition and also having that relatability with youth. I've done some teaching with youths, but I hear youths are kind of difficult to break through when you're trying to teach classes with them. What's your approach?
I do my very best to stay up to date on the music they're listening to. I try to position myself in a friendly way. I'm very relaxed. I tell jokes a lot. I'm certainly one of the least strict teachers they have. It doesn't mean that they're sort of, you know, chatting and loud in my room. It just means that they feel comfortable. So I really try to let them know however I can that I'm on their side and that I'm an ally. I'm a friend, not just a friend, also a guide, but someone who has their back. I try to give them that message and I keep it light. I often will check in with my students and say, hey, on a scale of like, show me with your thumb all the way down or thumb all the way up. How are you feeling? You know, 1 to 10, like give me just a quick thumb meter. And so in like 2 seconds, 3 seconds, I can get a measure of the room, how everyone's doing. Okay, this person's about a 5, this person's at a 9. So I just try to relate and I try to let them know that I care. I've found over many years that if students of any age know that you have their best interests at heart, then they're going to work and they're going to want to learn and they're going to bring their best most of the time.
Have that relatability, and you also try to keep in tune with the trends with the youth, and also checking in is definitely important greatly, especially with anyone, especially with youth. They have so much going on, peer pressure and things like that. So definitely you being there as an ally to them, that definitely will help them to open up better. You have a better classroom experience. We all were there, so it's difficult trying to break through it. Why did you want to teach high schoolers?
You know, when I went to school, I majored in English and I was thinking, oh, I'll become an English professor. You know, I'll teach Shakespeare and all. And then I was a major in English and I got out of school and I went into graduate school. And by the time I got my master's degree in English, I just thought, I don't want to have to spend 5 more years to get a doctorate degree, to get a PhD. So the girlfriend I was with at the time was moving back to Boston to get a job. And so I figured it was time. I just start teaching. So I got my master's degree and didn't really feel like being in school for 5 more years before my career began. So I just thought, well, a master's degree in English, I can teach high school. That'll be a great place to start. And if I decide to go back and get a PhD and teach college, then I could do that. But a woman at the time was moving back to Boston for her job, and I sent out resumes to high schools, mainly private high schools, because I didn't have a public teaching certificate yet. So, and I got a job, and that's really where it all began.
Wonderful transition. What is your motivation in teaching your students?
Originally, I was like, well, I love English, I love literature, and I certainly like teenagers. So my motivation was I enjoyed the idea of making literature understandable to them. You know, when I first went to graduate school, I thought I'd be teaching, I don't know what, literature theory to students. Once I got into high school, I was like, these kids, like, that's not really on their level and they're not interested. So it really became, how do I make something that maybe seems beautiful or wonderful, but also difficult, like Shakespeare or F. Scott Fitzgerald, some of these authors, William Faulk, Virginia Woolf. How do I make that, which is kind of difficult, not all students like to read, but how can I make it so that they understand it, or so they can see some of the beauty or some of the value that I see? And literature is about human beings, right? It's about lives. It's about existences. It's about all the struggles and challenges in the world. So it was really just, how can I bring something that I enjoy to teenagers and really make it share some of my enthusiasm and also help them to read, speak, and write better in the process. So it's, I thought presenting material would be a great thing because I enjoy presenting material to people, any sort of teaching. And teenagers, they especially need people who invest in them and who care about them and who try to put things in a way that relates to them. So that those were all challenges I thought would be great.
Really love how you have said that you have tried to take those complex stories and then make them more relatable, more digestible, and more connected to the teens where they're going to be enthusiastic to dive into the class instead of like, oh, another book and run to the next exit. Some students, they take their tablets with them to the bathroom.
I wish I could say they're always totally excited, but I at least think some teenagers reading and writing would be very low on their scale of what they want to do. But if I can make it a little bit interesting, to some of them love it. Some of them take to it naturally. A lot of them, it's not natural. But if I can take their interest level from 1 or 2 to a 5 or 6, then I've totally done my job. So it's, for me, it's about finding points that they relate to, finding materials that they can connect with, and sometimes even bringing them difficult materials, but sharing my enthusiasm so that at least they start to wonder, like, well, he seems very excited about this. So maybe there's something in there for me.
If you're energetic, then they will then wanting to dive into that more or less. It's a good synergy. What cultural norms did you learn while teaching your students offline and either online?
For example, most of the online students I've had have been in China. A friend of mine about, I want to say 7 or 8 years ago, he was in graduate school and he ended up paying for a big part of his graduate school by online teaching. It's something that's pretty flexible. So he could say, well, I'm free for these 4 hours and I'm free for these 3 hours. And so he could kind of, I guess, build his academic schedule and his teaching schedule together because there was some flexibility with the online. So he knew I was a full-time high school teacher. And he said, hey, Malcolm, this company in China is trying to make partnerships with teachers with experience who can design curriculum. And, you know, why don't you talk to one of the women who heads the company and just see if there's a match? So I had some good back and forth emails and then phone conversations. And she was like, yeah, I'd like to hire you to work for us. So I just started teaching online teenagers in China. And so I found in the 6 years that I was teaching kids online in China, students, teens online in China, that they are very respectful. I mean, it's like if you're a teacher, they automatically give you a level of respect that isn't always present in an American classroom. There's something built into the culture that you respect your elders and your teachers. So I definitely found them very attentive. Now, by the same token, they're not as demonstrative as some Americans. A little longer, if I'm making jokes with them, it takes a little longer for them to lighten up or laugh or really relate. I just found that whole culture in China very wonderful, very serious in a way, sometimes even too serious. They do work extremely hard. The students I worked with, sometimes they were going to classes 7 days a week. Certainly very hardworking, very industrious, very respectful, very results oriented. You know, I want to take this extra class because I want to get into a higher track, to get into a better school, to get a better job, to have a better life. So very, very directed and focused. That was a difference that I noticed with some of online students in China versus the American high school students that I've taught.
Definitely a different culture dynamic from like students in America. The discipline that they have in their culture is very beautiful, and we can learn a lot from their discipline all over, because we can get so much done if we just, our society from other cultures that are doing well. And especially in the classrooms, our teens take some of the traits of the Chinese students, will definitely be much further with our youths now.
At least the students I taught, I didn't go to China. The students I was teaching tended to be students whose parents really valued education more than most, even in a country that already values education. But the students I taught as a group, extremely respectful. They definitely valued education. They you know, I didn't have to try to explain to them why learning might be important. Whereas sometimes with American students, I want to say, like, look, it's important to be able to speak well and read well and be a literate person and have critical thinking skills. And I didn't need to say any of that to any of these students. Their parents automatically appreciated learning. The students automatically had it in their mind that learning is important. It's something I need to do. Achievement is important. So That I didn't ever have to say any of that to those students, which was refreshing.
I could imagine how your classes just flow. You can actually get a lot more coverage with your lessons. You could get to why they're there to help them practice their English and become proficient communicators, not just going into the behavior and emotional aspects of it, which could take however long, less stress for the teacher as well. And do you ever have a favorite lesson you taught in your classes?
My favorite online class that I've ever taught was probably a persuasion course that I designed. So I think it's about 10 classes, like 10 one-hour lessons. We'd learn about ethos, pathos, and logos, you know, like the main methods of persuasion. And what is it like to persuade through using emotions? What is it like to persuade using reason? And then we would read famous speeches by Martin Luther King, obviously the most famous speech of the last 100 years, the I Have a Dream speech. We read one of Ronald Reagan's speeches when the Challenge thing blew up and he was trying to comfort a grieving nation when the space shuttle blew up. We studied a bunch of famous speeches, also one of Barack Obama's well-known speeches. I like to teach persuasion because I feel like it's got an immediate benefit for the students. It's like if they can persuade people, they can, you know, build teams, they can build connections, they can get better job opportunities. I love teaching the methods of persuasion and kind of analyzing the speeches. They use emotion, they use reasoning. So I like to look at the strategies of persuasion, and I like taking the kids to a place where they had to write a persuasive speech and deliver online. So it seemed like a whole package. I really like the material of looking at some of the greatest speeches of the last 100 years and teaching not just the methods, but also teaching the kids how to be more persuasive speakers and writers.
That factor or that trait of being persuasive can definitely open a lot of doors, especially as a communicator. If you're able to bring a lot of people favor to your message or to what you're trying to offer, it'll definitely strengthen your connection, which will allow you to be able to provide value in so many ways with the way that you're able to connect with people. What was one of your favorite pieces from your students, the assignment on persuasion?
For example, I remember one student gave a speech about anti-school uniforms. And in China, my understanding was that most of the schools, they're wearing uniforms. I thought he was very innovative. He definitely says, well, uniforms stifle students' self-expression and they make us less original and going against the mold of what is expected. In a very original, it mattered to him to not need to wear a uniform and to really get his voice out there. So I just thought that was him taking a step out and really standing up for something that, even though it's very common for students to wear uniforms where he is, I enjoyed him kind of questioning that and bringing a lot of smart thinking and good research to his speech.
And then they see people from other countries like America and having to wear that, and then they have to do it. I see in their perspective, it also gives them a way to be opinionated and develop their own perspective on things and not just say yes because that's the hierarchy or that's what they subduce. I think persuasion or any type of theory writing does help with allowing the person to be able to express themselves. And we all have different perspectives and points on that same topic. I think that's a really fun way to utilize developing the communication skills in your classroom. I think that's a really key, especially the world is actually drawn on persuasion. From when you're meeting someone for the first time, you're persuading them to either be my friend or not, or being persuasive every day from either not buying that chocolate chip or studying, watching TV. So they have those conflicts internally, understanding the dynamic and levels of persuasion and being better speakers.
Oh, truly. I mean, it comes down to being a more powerful human being. It can influence everything from who we choose as, say, a lifetime partner. Am I a persuasive person? Am I engaging? Am I someone they want to be around or not? It can get how much am I going to earn in my job? If I'm starting a new business, life is about persuasion. And as long as our motives are good, let's have the greatest persuasion skills possible so that we can get people doing great things.
Of course, it's about helping as many people as possible. That's how we should, instead of, okay, how much money can I make? Because if you have all that money, you can still be very alone and not be successful. And so it's about just touching as many hearts and trying to open people's minds to the different experiences and different human perspectives. Because the Teaching Entrepreneur Challenge, everyone was going after lawyers. Everyone has their own approach, their own outlook, their own way to interact with that lawyer or interact with that need. There's never not any space for anyone to get that opportunity to
always room for someone who's very good at what they do. Whether I'm going to be aiming my business at Portuguese speaking professionals, because my wife is from Brazil, so she speaks Portuguese. Me, Portuguese. I really helped her with her English. And so I actually have some Brazilian high school students. And one of them was like, Mr. Cook, you mentioned that you were going to do a course on teaching Portuguese, right? You tell me when you're going to do that, because my mom's interested. I was like, okay, I'll tell you. Choosing the target audience who we teach to, it obviously we want to connect it to our own interests. You know, I love the Brazilian culture. I love Brazilian food. My wife's Brazilian. My stepsons are Brazilian. So I thought, yeah, I'd really like to help Portuguese speaking Brazilian professionals, mainly in this country, but wherever, improve their English skills. Automatic fit for me, because I love the culture and I've learned so much about it for, say, the last 7 years since I've been married to my wife. So it just seemed like an obvious to me.
Portuguese, that's really very flavorful. You'll definitely have a lot of talking topics and conversations, develop a lot of content around that. People will definitely draw to it. Latin America is a very big country, and you'll always have students wanting to learn, even from outside Spanish culture. It's very exciting. It's very explosive at times.
I did a tiny bit of research and quickly learned that Portuguese is the third most spoken language in Massachusetts after English and Spanish. And I know that the numbers of Portuguese speakers are increasing. So, I learned about this 21-day teacher entrepreneur challenge online. And I thought, well, not too expensive to enroll. I've been thinking I wanted to expand my online business and I want to expand into adult learners, and Brazilian professionals seemed like a particularly great group for me because I have such an interest in the culture. So that was really it. It went from in-person high school teaching to then branching out to also doing online teaching of Chinese teenagers on the weekends. I've also done one-on-one SAT teaching and English SAT, as well as college essay tutoring. I saw the struggle that my wife and stepsons went through as immigrants to this country, not learning the language, although that was easy for my stepsons because they were younger. Took my wife a little while, and just the whole process. And I thought, well, if I can give someone the keys to really succeeding in any society are knowing the language. That's the basis for everything else that happens. It's hard to succeed if you're speaking a language that's not the main language within the society. So I just thought, well, if I can teach Brazilians how to speak English better, it's just going to open all the opportunities in their lives and their businesses, for their families, for their future. So that just seemed like an obvious way to go. So I'm developing that business while holding down a full-time job teaching high school, continuing to put time into the business, develop the LinkedIn profile, post videos, you know, reach out to people. And it's very exciting, really exciting for me.
Sounds like your transition, your journey was definitely exciting. I can hear the passion and enthusiasm in your voice about your niche and how you want to cater to them. It's commonly thought that one can teach English remotely online from anywhere in the world, thus allowing for a nomadic lifestyle. Has that been your experience?
I haven't moved a lot while teaching online. I've moved within Massachusetts, but I have seen that you can reach halfway across the world and teach people in China. There's a 12-hour difference, but as long as you find common time, absolutely. And where it has been nomadic for me, for example, company that I was working for didn't really want you to take too many vacations just because they want a regular schedule. They want, you're teaching in class on Saturday, they might book you 30 weeks in a row. So you've got 30 Saturdays already booked out. So you can imagine, well, if a vacation comes up in the next 6 months, you want to still take it. So here's how the nomadic lifestyle worked for me. There were times when I was teaching at a campground in my car on my laptop, you know, teaching these kids literature, PowerPoint presentation, going through the books with them. So I was still able to travel. I live near Boston. I've been able to travel and I've been able to go on camping trips, teach from there. So as long as there's an internet connection, you can teach from anywhere online. Give one tip to people looking to teach online. Really make sure that if you're leaving a zone that you're familiar with, that you know that there's a good internet connection. So if you're going to a hotel, double check. Just make sure that set up, you have whatever equipment you need and you've asked whatever questions you need to make sure that when you get there, you are plugged in online and ready to go. When the internet spots out, it's just a killer for everyone.
Having that really good, strong internet connection does make teaching and any remote fashion awesome experience. So how did you manage to teach in the camp outside?
To use my cellular network, I had to drive probably 10 minutes from the main campground just to a parking lot that had a good connection.
Then the United States, traveling from here to there does have this nomadic or this type of unattached lifestyle where you're able to just plan, connected with students, providing a ton of value for them.
Hey, look at the campground. We got some beautiful trees around here. And then I get into the lesson. People are human as long as you're honest. I didn't want to go 9 months without a vacation. So on a week, I figured I better bring you guys camping. We could do this together.
Part of my world. I'm part of your world. Right. Why not? And a learning experience. You're constantly in a static position. You're never going to evolve. That's wonderful that you're continuously stretching yourself out there, especially teaching, learning Portuguese and wanting to reach out to that niche, open that door to learn English. So win-win situation.
Important it is to continue to learn. I know that whether I'm teaching high schoolers near Boston in an actual in-person classroom or whether I'm teaching online, the most exciting time to me, it often takes the most effort, but it's the most exciting, is those new learning curves. Oh, I got to read a new book. Oh, I've got to prepare a new curriculum. Something wonderful when I can pull out some lesson that I've done before and just do slight modifications. That's fine. It's a little less work. I always find that when I'm getting into a new curriculum or teaching a new audience or getting into a book that I've never read before, that's the most exciting because it's like, oh, I've taught Lord of the Flies 15, 20 times. I love it, right? Something wonderful about teaching a book that I've taught a million times. There's something really great about teaching a new book. As an example, I'm just reading this book, Just Mercy, which was a movie with Michael B. Jordan that came out 2019, but it's also a book by a man named Brian Stevens, a lawyer who started defending death row inmates in the South. And it's all about justice. It's all about injustice in society. And it's depressing because you learn so much about the racism of the system and about challenges of that inmates face in the South. It's inspiring and it makes me want to know more and learn more and speak up more. So something like that, which I listened to it on my way to work. I listened to it on the way back. Got my ninth graders. Some of them are reading To Kill a Mockingbird, which has similar issues of social justice. So I find that very enriching and rewarding because I learn new issues, not just about literature, but about society and about social justice. So that's what keeps it fresh and new for me. It's like a new learning curve, a brand new audience, exposing people to new ideas.
Fresh new ideas and those fresh topics to talk about definitely help to make your classrooms that much engaging. I definitely like where you mix up with usual lessons and then you have these cultural issues that we can talk about that's happening all over that we can freshen from the students, but also allow them to have some type of say about it because dished out with these type of topics at them. And sometimes they don't know how to address it, what to think about it. And so when you are enlightening them about these various topics that are conflicted or a bit stereotypical, it allows them to think in a different dynamic, more kind and how we can be the opposite of those individuals and the characters. You learn so much from a book and I'm a big reader. Did being an English language teacher inspire you to learn a second language?
Second language I learned was French. That was just grade school and high school. And I took a couple of French, 1 or 2 years of French in college. I didn't really use it much. I visited France once in my 20s. And so got to use it a little then, but haven't really used it much. So unless you're going to go out to a French restaurant, meeting a woman that I really wanted to get to know is what inspired me to learn a second language. She spoke very little English, almost none when I first met her. I spoke no Portuguese. So it was just Google Translate for a few months, really easy. You send a text message in English and she translates it into Portuguese. She sends it. It was all text messages for a few months. I enjoy learning languages. Meeting her and then learning the language is what inspired me to then become teacher of ELLs, gotten me into the adult learners, Portuguese speaking learners, is my experience with her and with loving Brazilian culture and with watching the challenges that she's had to go through and thinking, well, I could definitely make a difference for these adults who are, the teenagers have no problem learning English. They're going to go to school. They're going to be talking about it 24. They're speaking English 5-6 hours a day in school, but the adults are the ones who really have a hard time because they're not speaking. Some of them work in industries where they're surrounded by either Portuguese, Spanish speaking people. So they're just not learning English the same way that the young people who come to this country and they're put into American schools are. The adults are really the ones who need it because they're not going to get that automatic exposure in school.
Yes, of course. I definitely agree with you, Malcolm. Have you ever thought of maybe learning Chinese?
There's such an emphasis for Chinese students to learn English. I would love to do it. No need. I've never been in a situation where
the majority of your students reside in one country or are they spread out all over the world across several time zones? Does that pose any challenges for you?
In-person students are in the same time zone here in the Eastern time zone in the US. Online students were all in China. Sometimes they might want to take a class 7 in the evening, which would be a time when maybe they had just finished dinner. So then it meant, okay, I'm getting up at 6 a.m. on a Saturday to in front of the computer, ready to go at 6 a.m. on a Saturday. So that would be a challenge. I tried to schedule my classes a little later, say 8 a.m., 9 a.m., such a haul. I know for me, I like to sleep in once or twice a week just because I stay up too late as it is on the weeknights. That was a bit of a challenge, just trying to schedule the classes at a time that was reasonable for them and for me. When daylight savings time hit, you'd have to remember because sometimes it's a 13-hour difference between the U.S. and China, and sometimes it's 12 hours, depending on whether we're on daylight savings or not. So when that changed, I obviously had to remember like, okay, classes are going an hour earlier or I need to be on an hour later. So the twice a year adjustment that came with the adjustment for daylight savings in China. So they were following about a 12-hour difference.
Great that you're able to find cohesive, adaptable time frame to connect with your students and where it's going to be much more better for your well. You know, you don't want to be groggy teaching your students and don't get the best of you. So that's good that you found a nice happy medium in your time with teaching. Mm-hmm. Have you faced challenges while teaching English online or offline, and what did you learn from any of them?
Working hard and trying to find enough time to say, get enough sleep, hang out with my wife, or the challenge is not really teaching the class or designing the curriculum. It's really just cutting out enough time to make it all work, which is why, as I've taught full-time in person, never took on more than about 6 hours on the weekend is about the most I would do because that was in addition to full-time teaching job. And if I was teaching 5 or 6 classes, it usually meant I was preparing for at least 5 or 6 hours. So, you know, teaching 5 more classes on the weekend meant that there were at least 5, if not 8 to 10 prep hours to do that reading and to get ready to teach. Take a 45, 50 hour regular work week, and then you start tacking on 15, 20 hours on. It's just juggling how much can I reasonably do while still taking care of myself. That really was the biggest challenge. It was never a challenge connecting to the students or enjoying the material or enjoying the students or any of that. It was really just taking care of myself while pushing to teach a bunch of weekend classes.
Good that you are conscious about that, how you are in that equation and trying to accommodate for your students some type of time management system or calendar organizer that you follow. Prepping is the most important to then delivery and the result. If you don't prepare, you're preparing to fail or you're preparing to succeed.
Preparation system, the busier I get, the more that it's like, this is the only time I have to prepare. So it's not like I'm sitting here some nights like, yeah, I think I'll just watch SportsCenter for 4 hours because I might watch 45 minutes of a football game on the week. I might zone out for half an hour at the end of the day just to decompress a little. No, the busier I get, my time system is more like, okay, I have only 3 hours to prepare for my upcoming classes tomorrow. So that's going to be the time. And quite frankly, no, there were times where I think I did overdo it. And it's like, all right, I cannot continue teaching six classes. You take on six classes, say, oh, 6 extra hours of the week, no problem. But when it's 6 hours of classes and 12 hours of reading to get ready for those classes, you've taken on about 20 more hours in your work week. It's really just honoring my limit and being able to say, I'd finish out a class, but I'd be like, I can't continue teaching in that 7 a.m. Saturday times. It's just too much. I obviously use Google Calendar. I've got a ton of alarms on my phone. I might have 2 or 3 or 4 alarms going up. One's just remind me to not to forget to bring my glasses to work. Another one's, you've got a Zoom call at 8 p.m. with your volunteer group or got the interview with you. So yeah. I set a ton of alarms. I try to get everything on my calendar. And then I just try to, if things just seem too much and you say I'm not getting enough sleep, then I just try to cut back where I can to keep myself always pushing, but not pushing so hard that burned out.
Yes, of course, you have to think about yourself. If you're not taking care of yourself, then you won't be able to take care of anyone else. So keeping yourself interest while serving others, you can definitely deplete yourself in the end. So self-care is definitely important. And I was wondering, does your wife teach Portuguese? Looking at you teaching English, would that inspire her to want to teach Portuguese?
She's joked and said, hey, I can be the Portuguese teacher and you can be the English teacher. So, I mean, I guess I've been her private student with Portuguese because usually when we're speaking at home, we're speaking Portuguese, but we joke. She'll say, honey, we can only speak English at home. I need to keep improving. I'm like, okay, only English. And then I forget 2 days later and I'm speaking Portuguese again. We have a good back and forth with that. She certainly asked me, oh, Mal, can you run English classes on the weekend? I have a ton of Brazilian friends who would love to take it. And I've generally been like, well, I got too many online classes already teaching kids in China. The Chinese government shut down most of the online teaching for non-Chinese people who are not in China. They basically shut down this whole company. So I was like, all right, I can open up some time to do something else. And I thought, this is the thing, is teaching Brazilian professionals, because there's a huge need and it would be close to my heart to do it. So the door closing with the online teaching for those teenagers in Asia, it's opened a new door teaching adults and developing that business.
It really is. It's like one door closes, another door opens. Is it necessary to have a side hustle or an additional source of income while teaching English online or offline?
Just like anything, we need to develop new business while we're still eating and putting food on the table and earning. So whether someone's a waiter and they want to become an actor, or whether they're a customer service person in a hotel and they want to become an online English teacher, whatever you do, you obviously need to spend it wealthy. You need to find a way to make it work financially. So I don't think anyone would be wise to just drop everything and say, I'm putting all my time and energy into developing an online English, unless you've got a year's worth of salary saved up. Anything, it involves a transition. Where am I now? How much income do I have? How much do I need? How much time can I devote to developing this new business while still just making sure my financial needs are taken care of? We start by getting a few students, see how that goes, get more experts in the field, can charge a higher rate because we get really good and our product gets really good. And as that happens, we can cut back on whatever else we're doing to put food on the table as we build the new business and as we find the joy in building a new business.
Yes, of course, that's good that you do have to think about feeding yourself and helping sustain yourself whilst also developing your business schedule around all that. Earning another income shouldn't be where it's going to deplete you, where you're going to be scrambling for your survival. And so it should be fun and enjoyable. Do you have any teaching philosophies that you follow in your classroom?
Philosophies, I often joke with people about it. I say, look, everyone goes home happy. Let's face it, we're all on this earth for a limited amount of time. And I'm not here to make anyone unhappy, whether that's a 15-year-old freshman in my class who's just reading To Kill a Mockingbird for the first time, or whether that's one of my colleagues, or whether that's someone I meet online. You know, I'd like to think that the people I meet go away better than I found them. That's the goal. So my teaching philosophy in short would be like, make sure that they know that you care about them. And then sort of anything else that goes on beyond that is going to work, because students are invested when they know that we are invested in them. And if my audience knows that, like, I'm here to help you read, speak, present, you know, better, and I want to help you improve your life, then they're going to trust me. Whereas if it's like, well, you know, okay, I'm here to get my pension, and I just got another 10 years and, you know, sit down and shut up, and I got some worksheets for you, that's never going to work, right? Because I'm just biding time and I'm just there for myself. And yeah, I get the bottom line is I need to convey the message that I care about you. And if I can do that, then almost anything else that happens in the classroom will work because they know that. Whereas we all go through challenging times. If I'm going through a really tough time in my life, then I don't have as much to give, and they feel that. So I try to just stay on top of my own stuff and make sure that taking care of myself and taking care of anything in my life that might distract me, and then just bring my care and compassion into the classroom. That's all we can ever do, right? Show people that we care. And
if you have passion in your teaching, it definitely will leak out and bleed, and your students will gravitate towards it. They can definitely smell if it's not authentic, genuine. So they will definitely sense that it's not, you won't be able to convey in your teaching a fluid and strong messaging to your students, and they're not going to learn very well. And so philosophy to have where if you care and they feel that, then it'll definitely become a very cohesive and very strong environment for teaching.
You know, one thing to add on to that, Samantha, the more I can be myself, the better. I know when I started teaching, I was like, oh my gosh, what if I don't know an answer to a question? It's like, and now I'm like, who cares if I don't know an answer? I just say to them, I got no idea. Open up your computer. What does Google say? You know, so I think being real with them and really just leveling with, if I don't know something, like, I don't know. Or, you know, I used to think, I often will stay up late. I joke and I say nothing productive happens before midnight because my wife's asleep, my stepson's asleep, I got no distractions, I can finish getting ready. So, you know, it means I'm often tired in school. It might mean that I need to take a nap in the afternoon, but I don't hide that anymore. I used to be like, oh, I can't send an email at 1 a.m. The kids are going to think I'm crazy. I'm like, you know what? That's my work schedule. I sent you an email at 1. Like, that's just how I work. And I've just owned who I am. And over many years of teaching, I've just realized, like, I don't need to pretend I'm someone I'm not. I can just fess up and be like, I'm imperfect. I sometimes stay up too late. I sometimes procrastinate. But like, at the end of the day, I care about you, and we're all here to learn and to really to support each other. And so once they get that, then it's like, who cares if I was up at 1 o'clock and sending emails? Who cares? They know that I care, and I know that I can just be myself and be honest with them. And they appreciate that. They're like, oh, there's a real person in front of me. It's not just some plastic figure who says, hi kids, wonderful to see you. Have an excellent weekend. See you later. I'm living a perfect life just like you. It's like, no, that's not reality. So I try to just joke with them and be real with them and let them know that I care. And that goes a long way with most of them.
Yeah, that's awesome that you try to be as authentic. We're here on this earth and we're here to support each other. Why not have a good time, enjoy our different personalities? What's one thing you wish you had known when you began your teaching career?
It would have been nice to know that, like, the curriculum is not going to be a challenge. I mean, all you need to be is one step ahead of your students, right? And like, I've been to school, to a lot of years of school, and they haven't been to school for as long. And I used to worry about, oh my gosh, what if I don't know this? What if I'm not the expert in this? What? And it's like, the real challenge is human interaction. It's managing people. It's making sure that they know I'm on their team and that I have their back. It's never, oh my gosh, did I remember what was on page 27 of The Great Gatsby? It's like, that stuff, as long as I read the material and prepare, I'm going to know it, right? But I was worried about, what if I don't know the answers to these questions? And really, the only challenge in teaching is, how well do I relate to people and how well do they relate to me? Do I show them who I really am? Do I care about them and do I convey that? So I think what I wish that I had known is, like, look, relax, Malcolm, it's going to be fine. Just be yourself and do your best, and the kids will get what they need to out of the class. And that's it. Like, I remember staying up really late when I started. I was just nervous to be presenting. It's like doing, you know, 5 1-hour presentations every single, you know, I remember looking up at the clock in my first year of teaching and feeling like, okay, I just sort of gave them my whole lesson and there's still 25 minutes in the period. I'm like, oh my God, what do I do with them? And having, you know, near a panic attack. Now it's like, after teaching for so many years, say, okay, hey, let's take out our journals. Hey, let's start our homework for tomorrow. You just get how to manage a class once you've done it for long enough. So it's like, I would have given myself the message, like, relax, be yourself. You're not going to be perfect, but it's okay. It's okay that you're not perfect. And the kids are going to like it if you're just honest with them and just share your struggles and your victories, you know, up front.
That's really genuine and that's really heartfelt that you shared how you may not know everything right then and there, teaching, learn from that, and they're able to be open to that activity. And it's okay to be imperfect in your teaching. Some days you're not going to have the best curriculum set up and the time may pass you, and it's okay. Really great to be yourself while you teach and take it easy, and things will go fall in place in the classroom. Do you employ warm-ups or introductions in your classes? If you do, would you like to share some?
Pretty much every day in my person-to-person teaching, my regular job, I do warm-ups. That became especially important when we went through COVID and when everyone had to go online. Of course, working in a high school, they were very concerned with how's the students' mental health? Are they doing okay with this quarantine? Are they nervous about COVID? So there was a lot of emphasis on kind of whole person teaching and on checking in with students and making sure they're doing okay, giving them opportunities to kind of say how they're doing. So long story short, I've kind of carried that through, even though we're in person and we're not doing remote teaching anymore. I always do a check-in. So it could be something simple like, hey, hold up your thumb. Show me on a scale from like 0 to 10. How are you feeling today? And it's just something simple. As I think I mentioned, in 30 seconds, I can ask students, how you doing? Show me. And I can quickly get a gauge of the entire, okay, that boy is at a 7, you know, that girl's at about an 8.5. Like, oh, that guy, he's about a 4. So I'll even say, okay, we're sending extra positive energy toward, you know, Teresa today because she's not feeling great. And so it's just, that's a quick warm up. I'll also do things like, I'll say like, hey, what's your favorite jam right now? You know, tell me a song that you're totally into. And then I'll share with them, oh, I like all kinds of music. I try to get into their interests. I'll say, what's the most delicious dessert you can imagine? Or I'll say, if you could teleport anywhere in the universe right now and spend a whole day doing whatever you want, money's no option, no obstacles in your way, where would you go? What would you do? So anything to get them talking is a good warm up. And I find asking about their interests, I'll say, you know, what's your favorite pair of shoes? Or do you have a favorite pair of clothing? Or, you know, what's the most delicious thing you ate this week? Or what would you like to eat if you could whip up any lunch you? So I just try to get into what might interest. I'll hand out these mini whiteboards and the markers and I'll say, write your answer on this board. So especially with a real quiet class, I'll say, all right, nobody's talking. And I'll say, okay, raise your hand if you like vanilla more than chocolate. Okay, raise your hand if you like strawberry. And just to get them moving. So I just learn many ways to try to break through that kind of like silence. Whatever gets them talking about their own interests is a good warm-up.
Those are really some fun warm-ups, how you'd have where they got the pole, that really works, or the thumb temperature. That definitely helps them to get them engaged and get them alert. And it feels like they're not being put on the spot almost. Allowing them to be a communal activity, because no one likes to be put on the spot in the classroom, of course. And the teacher, we're already on the spot. So it's like pretty natural, but activity.
You can gesture with a hand in the air or like, okay, I'm a 5 out of 10, I'm a 10 out of 10, I'm 1 out of 10. And I don't even need to hear them open their mouth. Some of them will, and we'll share. Other times they just want to move their thumb up and down, or they want to write a sentence on the whiteboard and hold it up, but they don't actually. So it works for the more shy students and for the more outgoing.
That's good. You tailor to both personalities and personas. And do you do any dance moves like a dap?
I'll sometimes be like, all right, you know, who can show me how to Dougie? And you guys heard of the electric slider? Is that too old? Or who knows how to do the moonwalk? Hey, here's a quick video of Michael Jackson, first time he did the moonwalk, singing Billie Jean. I love to goof around with the kids. I'll do little dance moves. So they know that like Cook's being goofy again, but message that like, whoever you are, it's okay. And, you know, if you feel like you're going to look like an idiot, don't worry, because I'm already doing it for you. So it's just like, we're allowed to be silly. We're allowed to be goofy. We're allowed to be human. I think they appreciate it, even if they're not going to get up and show me how to dug.
To take off the mask sometime and also allow them to just see you as a person, as a human. And you can have fun sometime. You can get on their level. Definitely helps with having a very engaging classroom. What is the one common myth about your profession that you would like to debunk?
You know, I feel like when some people think about what goes on, say in a high school classroom, they imagine students kind of sitting here like, like this, you know, with their book open or their computer in front of them. And like, that's some classes, some of the time. But, you know, there's also like, okay, Melissa's looking down and she's like texting on her phone. You see her thumbs like behind her computer screen, or Jeremy's like opened up Google Chat and he's sending a message to Bill across the room. And I think one of the myths is that like students are kind of sitting there with rapt attention, like waiting for you to teach them something wonderful. Like, no, they're human beings and they like Snapchat. And the truth about it is I need to be engaging and I need to have some standards and tell them, I'm like, hey, we got to put that away. But I guess the myth would be that like sort of students are just sitting there waiting to receive knowledge. It's like, no, you're forming. If you're a teacher, you better have some tricks in your, yes, in your hat, and you better be able to speak to people at whatever level they're at, whether you're speaking to adults, whether you're speaking to teenagers, whether you're speaking to Americans, native English speakers, whether you're speaking to someone who's got to be able to connect wherever they are. I do my best to kind of put myself in their shoes. I ask them, what are you interested in? What do you like to eat? What do you write a journal about you and your family? Write me an introduction letter that says to me, this is what I know about English. This is what I like. This is what I don't like. This is what my family's like. Tell me anything you want. It's like anything to get so that I know roughly in small ways where they're coming from and what matters to them.
Yeah, those are really great common myths. Also that high schoolers, they're not just in there receiving knowledge like statues or little angels. Teenagers, they're going to be a little sleepy or they're going to be texting, and that's part of the classroom experience. They can't just forget that because they're in a classroom. Outside environment will not intrude in that. You know, it's definitely okay. You do have to put your foot down on rules and discipline and let them know that there's a time and place for that. There's lunchtime, and then while you're in the classroom, you have to stay studious and busy. And the attention span for students, especially in nowadays, are pretty low. I want to sit in your classroom. Yeah, because they're really engaging and fun. How do you compete with the phone of social media and TikTok and Facebook?
I'm very loose about a lot of things, but I try to stamp down on the phones pretty quick because it's so easy to be sneaking text messages. And okay, if a kid needs to send mom a message because they need to get picked up later, that's fine. But usually they can do that between classes. So I try to just be like, hey, you guys, you got to put your phones away. I say, I know that's more interesting than I am. I can't compete with a $1,000 computer there and you got all your social contacts in one place. I can't compete with that. So you got to put it away because I'm never going to win that comp. I joke about it. I tell them like, no phones, anything like, unless you've asked me, like I said, hey, I don't have access to Google Classroom this way, but, or I left my computer at home, I need to get to the assignment on my phone, then it's just got to be a way. So I try to be honest with them. I try to tell them, I know you'd rather be on Snapchat than in English. Right now is the time to be in English. I try to win their trust and give them my trust because, like I said, I can make such headway with students when they trust me and when I trust them. Whereas when there's any sort of antagonism or they feel like, you know, I'm out to get them in any way, it's going to just automatically shut off that learning connections. Having standards, but also knowing when to joke. And it's really, if they know that I have their back, then they'll work. And if they feel like, if they don't fully trust me, or if I'm being unreasonable, it's I'm not being consistent, then like you had said earlier, they smell that and they're like, we don't really need to work for this guy. So
open communication is definitely key. Putting ground rules, got a good stronghold in that class.
I'm looser than most teachers. There's no doubt about it. I know some teachers who are like, you know, they just immediately come down. There's none of this. And that's just not my, I get, you know, earlier on you had asked like, what do you wish you had known? As a teacher, I never want to try to be someone other than who I am. You know, I'm more loose in the class than a lot of teachers. There's been times I'm like, I got to be more strict. But if I'm doing something because I feel like I should be doing it, but it's not really who I am, it's not going to work. It's like, I need to honor being a disciplinarian, but in the way that I'm a disciplinarian. I can't be the disciplinarian the way that my colleague is. It's about, I need to honor my own personality in all my teaching. I can't try to lay down some arbitrary rule just because I think, well, that's what I should be doing. It doesn't really work. I need to own it and I need to honor my own standards while I'm also honoring the standards of the school.
Yes, most definitely. You have to have your own type of way of disciplining where it's going to be beneficial for both your student and for you, because then it could cause chaos. Patient in that process of disciplining and also putting the ground rules and implying standards. And that's good that you're, you know, very limbo in that. Where can people find you over the internet, Malcolm?
LinkedIn is the best place as far as any sort of professional communication. Cook is spelled with an E. It's Malcolm Cook. So if you just look on LinkedIn and type in M-A-L-C-O-L-M and then Cook, C-O-O-K-E, then you should find me there as an English, as a second language teacher and a high school teacher. So.
Okay. Thank you so much, Malcolm, for just sitting with us and sharing your very beautiful and rewarding, very aspiring career. We are so ever grateful to have you on the show, speaking about your knowledge and value about so many various things. You're such a dynamic teacher and such a dynamic person in general. I feel really touched talking with you and connecting with you today.
Samantha, thank you so much for asking. I saw that you've got all these podcasts being scheduled. It's like, wow, this woman's a real goat. Like, she's really putting the things that we're learning into practice, and she's got interviews. So I appreciate it. And I just want to return to you. It's very admirable what I see you doing, just interviewing people, your own business off the ground. And, you know, you're giving people a chance to share their stories, and everyone wants to feel listened to. And we all want to feel like we've got something important to say. So you're really providing a place for people to say, this is who I am. This is what I do. This is what I value. And that's awesome. So keep it going. That's great. And I appreciate spending the time.
Thank you, Michael. I really appreciate those kind words. I'm feeling teary-eyed.
That was an end to another show. Please visit the website at www.teachingonlineenglish.com for the show notes. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get notifications of the next show. Talk with you soon.